Why do democracies consistently implement policies that economists across the political spectrum agree are harmful? Take trade protectionism, a policy that economists have demonstrated for centuries hurts the very economies it claims to protect. Yet democracies worldwide maintain significant trade barriers. This paradox sits at the heart of Brian Kaplan's provocative thesis. Voters aren't merely uninformed, they're systematically irrational. The standard explanations fall short. Special interests don't fully explain why harmful policies often enjoy broad public support. Voter ignorance alone doesn't capture the problem either. What's happening is more troubling. Voters allow emotion and ideology to override factual information when forming political opinions. Protectionism persists because it feels good to believe in it, regardless of economic reality. This creates a dangerous externality. When you vote based on comforting but incorrect beliefs, you're not just harming yourself, you're imposing costs on everyone subject to the resulting policies. Since the psychological benefits of maintaining these beliefs are personal, while the costs are shared by society, voters have little incentive to overcome their biases. When enough citizens think this way, harmful policies win by popular demand. In a contest to guess an ox's weight, the average of 787 guesses was off by just 1 pound, demonstrating the miracle of aggregation, where random errors cancel out in large numbers. In democracy, even if only 1% of voters are well-informed while others choose randomly, the informed minority can determine the outcome. This miracle appears elsewhere. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire audience polls were 91% accurate, and financial markets routinely outperform individual experts. However, the miracle only works when errors are random, not systematic. Voters' economic beliefs contain systematic errors through 4 key biases. 1. Anti-market bias, misunderstanding how markets align private and public interests. 2. Anti-foreign bias, underestimating foreign interaction benefits. 3. Make-work bias, confusing employment with prosperity. 4. Pessimistic bias, underestimating economic conditions. These systematic biases lead democracy to produce suboptimal policies. When voters misunderstand protectionism's effects, politicians implement excessive trade barriers, giving voters what they want rather than what benefits them. Why do sensible people embrace nonsensical political beliefs? The answer lies in rational irrationality. When people value both material prosperity and ideological worldviews, they make calculated trade-offs between them. In a democracy, maintaining ideological loyalty costs almost nothing because individual votes rarely determine outcomes. If restricting foreign workers costs society $1,000 per person annually, but there's only a 0.1% chance your vote influences this policy, you effectively pay just $1 to indulge protectionist beliefs. This creates a disconnect where voters collectively sacrifice $1 million in social wealth for ideological satisfaction worth only $501 individually. Unlike market consumers who face direct consequences through prices, voters bear virtually no personal cost for embracing economic delusions. This explains why education and economic literacy often fail to predict voting patterns. Evidence shows little connection between personal economic interests and political opinions. Wealthy people may support higher taxes on the rich, while low-income workers might oppose minimum wage increases. Anti-market bias leads us to underestimate market benefits by focusing on profit motives rather than competitive dynamics. As Schumpeter noted, capitalism stands its trial before judges who have the sentence of death in their pockets. We mistakenly view profits as gifts to the rich rather than rewards for serving consumers, and misinterpret interest as exploitation rather than compensation for delayed consumption. Anti-foreign bias causes us to view international trade as competition rather than mutual benefit. We instinctively distrust foreign commerce, embedding this suspicion in our language. yet the law of comparative advantage shows that beneficial trade is possible even when one nation is less productive across all measures. Make-work bias blinds us to the benefits of labor efficiency. We see producing more with less labor as threatening rather than progressive, believing prosperity comes from having jobs rather than creating value. Bastiat mocked this as Sisyphism, after the Greek myth of endless toil. True prosperity comes from creating desired goods and services, not merely employment. Pessimistic bias persists despite improving living standards. As Herbert Spencer observed, while conditions improve faster than ever, there swells louder the cry that the evils are so great that nothing short of a social revolution can cure them. This paradox continues. As life gets better, people become increasingly convinced it's getting worse. The 1996 survey of Americans and economists on the economy revealed stark belief differences between 1,510 randomly selected Americans and 250 economics PhDs who answered identical questions. To test if economists' views stem from bias rather than expertise, Kaplan examined two criticisms: self-serving bias, favoring policies benefiting their affluent position, and ideological bias, free market fundamentalism. After controlling for income, job security, demographics, and political ideology, these biases explained less than 20% of the lay expert belief gap. The remaining 80% reflects economists' expertise. The largest disagreements emerged on foreign aid. Public sees it as problematic, economists consider it insignificant. Immigration, public fears job losses, economists see economic benefits, and business profits, public vastly overestimates typical rates. Another major gap appeared regarding family incomes. Economists recognize their general rise over 20 years, while the public perceives decline against living costs. Politicians face an impossible choice when voters hold biased policy beliefs: implement expert-recommended policies and risk rejection, or follow popular demands and bear blame for poor outcomes. President Clinton's support for NAFTA, despite public opposition and Federal Reserve chairs maintaining tight monetary policy against popular pressure, illustrate leaders choosing optimal policy over popularity. This dynamic explains persistent voter dissatisfaction. Politicians are condemned whether they follow expert consensus, labeled as elitist, or implement popular but ineffective policies, blamed for poor results. Ironically, voter unselfishness can worsen outcomes. When voters prioritize social welfare over self-interest, their shared misconceptions about effective policy lead them to collectively support counterproductive measures, amplifying rather than moderating harmful choices. Democracy isn't doomed to produce bad policies, but improving outcomes requires recognizing its vulnerabilities. Several approaches could enhance democratic decision-making while preserving its core principles. Educational reform offers a promising path. Current curricula should shift toward practical knowledge that helps citizens evaluate policy proposals, emphasizing economics, statistics, and probability. These tools help students identify cognitive biases and better assess claims about policy impacts. Economists must improve their public communication. Rather than retreating into technical language, they should follow Frederick Bastiat's example, actively addressing misconceptions with clear, engaging explanations about economic principles like minimum wage effects, trade benefits, and price controls. Democracy functions as a commons, not a market. Voters contribute to a common pool where outcomes depend on average content, creating the problem of mental pollution, systematically biased beliefs that contaminate collective decision-making. People often treat their worldview as a consumption good, resisting evidence that challenges their convictions. The solution lies in recognizing democracy's limitations while designing institutions that harness its strengths. Our democratic future depends not on blind faith in majority rule, but on creating systems that encourage rational deliberation about shared policies.